Here we go.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
Radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening. Yeah, I played that for Exteda because I think we're destined to always be together, which is probably scary on her part, to be quite honest with you. But anywho, welcome to the new Panic Room episode 193. Oh, only 7 more weeks to 200, and she's promised me something special. So, I dread to think, to be honest with you. I do miss her. You know, we don't speak much these days because I know we're both very busy, and I think she, you know, she's miserable most of the time. So I think we'll bring her on. Tina. That was a nice segue. So I mentioned it, so you could come on and sort of, you know, whine about your sore back or whatever. So off you go.
You know, I'm going to say that I am alarmed by how fast these weeks are going by. I mean, we joke around about, didn't we just do this?
Well, I remember having the conversation that, oh, it'll be the 200th show in like 3 months and we'll have to do something. It's literally 7 weeks away. So you really need to start planning something because, you know me, I'll not.
I know.
I'll not.
I actually, you know what, the beginning stage of planning was I did mark it off on the calendar, so I'm getting
that's a start, isn't it? That's a real good
start.
What have you been up to this week, except having a bad back?
I've been having a bad back, and I've been working in the living room, and what else? Work, you know. Exciting. Just it was a normal week, I guess, last week was, or this week. Hey, we're still on this week. Yeah, no, it was a normal week. The boyfriend is taking next week off, and I'm hoping we're going to do something fun, and we're looking at the, well, you know, it's weird. I don't know if I should say that we're looking into, like, a theme park or something, or, you know, I mean, is that taboo? Do we not talk about, you know, the fact that the states that we're opening up and stuff and things are open.
We're gonna have fun.
Yeah.
They're opening up here and you know, so the incidence of coronavirus are increasing. Well, what do you expect, really?
All these people have been locked up for three or four months
and not coming and all that, so suddenly they're out into the general population. Yeah, of course they're going to get it. I mean, but then you can't,
you know,
we can't all stay home forever. I mean, it's just fucking ridiculous.
Not only that people are freaking out because the numbers are going up, and we're seeing that, I do know. But then again, I know of two people who have gotten tested and it's been positive, but they have no symptoms or they're not even sick.
So 80% of people who had it are asymptomatic, and another big proportion sort of have a bit of a sniffle and a sore throat. I mean, like you say, I it's a good chance I had it. Okay, I was sick, but it was only marginally worse than a bad dose of flu, you know, and I survived it, you know, but I don't know. Again, it's because I don't do sick. I mean, there's that as well. But it kicked my ass. But, you know, I turned right around and kicked its ass right back, you know. So,
yeah, you did.
You know, which means, you know, me and the kids, been exposed. So we should be immune now. So, in fact, I was speaking to my son, you know, because I've still the sort of humming around about the schools coming back and what they're going to do to make up the time, etc. So, you know, what we should do is offer, you know, dirt cheap or free antibody testing, which is like a little blood test, yeah? And, you know, if you've got the antibodies, you can go back to school. You're going to be fine. You're not going to get it again. Or if you do, it's going to be very, very watered down. So, but they won't do
that. Yeah, I did have to fill out a survey for my kid's school, you know, what I wanted to see happen next year. And I guess they've made a decision that, you know, the kids are going to go back full time, but parents do have the option to do online school. And I don't think that was.
We got that notification today saying that the school district has agreed to fully fund any child who wants to do distance learning. I just want them out of the fucking house.
I'm telling you, I cannot wait.
Go.
Yeah, that's us too. I think they start back here August 4th, I think. I mean, I still am, like, shocked at how soon. I mean, when I was in school, we started back in, like, September. You know, that's, you know,
yeah,
fall.
We did it in England because it was always around my birthday, so within the first couple of weeks of September. Here, they go back on the 24th here out of August.
Fourth,
if they go back, I guess, you know, if they go back,
I'm like, it's the summer, No, ours said that they were. And so they you know, and I'm excited. And he's excited too, I think. I think he was just really getting into the whole girl thing. So, you know, he wants to be there to see the girls. So it's definitely cutting into his social, you know, social time.
Well, of course, yeah. Of course. But so what, yeah, what's, you know, I'm going to play the jingle because I've not played it for a while. Actually, just to, so it gives you a little bit. Yeah, I know you see. You've got a bit of time now to.
Into a wake in the morning and I step outside and I take a deep breath and I get real high and I scream from the top of my lungs, what's going on? In a dream,
Xtina, what is going on?
Oh, I love it when you do this because, you know, I don't know. I'm busy. I'm so busy. And but what's going on? Things, some really good
things.
Some big things. Yeah.
Bigly things.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Well, you know, we've got all being well next week. We've got a couple of, is it next week or this week? No, next week we've got a couple of was it this? I'm losing track. I am losing track. A couple of launches. It must be. It can't be this week because it's Thursday already. So it must be next week.
Yeah, it's gotta be next week.
We have the new one from David Owen Hughes, walled in. And possibly something else. I don't know. I just, you know. Who knows?
Yeah, you know, and I have a lot of audio. A lot of the audio books that are just, you know. ACX has just taken such a long time to pass through the last, but I have so many that I'm waiting on them. I'm just waiting every day. I'm like, please let today be, I guess not, you know, so hopefully soon we'll have I can't even, there seems to be a lot of them that are just waiting. They're just waiting to go live. And, definitely been long enough.
Be...
So any day.
Well, I know we have one from February, and I don't know what the, you know.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
you chase
them
up, and you get a form letter saying, give me some bullshit, you know.
Yeah. Synagogue Horror is due out too, and I think that the man-eating books, I believe all three of those are ready to go. So we got a lot going on, and.
Yeah,
so we're just
Synagogue Horror is brilliant. I mean, I'm looking forward to that being out on audiobook. But yeah, maybe we've got, you know, the staff who review the books and that, if they're on skeleton staff or something, I suppose. But either it's just frustrating.
It is, you know, as weird as this is, the books, they feel like my babies too, when they're, you know, I put them up on ATX.
I know,
suckle
them
at
your virtual teat, as it were, and feed them into the world, and then they're just sort of kept in the incubator for far too long, so,
I love that word, suckle, that's a good word. I like that word, suckle. I'm going to have to try to fit it into more sentences.
It's not used anywhere near enough. But so anywho, what have we got coming up on the show this very evening? I mean, I presume you know. One of us has to know because I haven't got a clue.
I do. I'm really excited. I can't remember how long ago because it doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but we had Jennifer Benet on. And she was a lovely guest, and I was so it was such a great show. She was so fun to have on, and so
she did the really really steamy reading.
Oh, it was steamy.
I never forget a bit of steam. I do like a bit of steam, I have to say. Something that is lacking in my life at the moment is a bit of steam.
Steam.
I need a bit of steam.
So we have Jennifer back along with Olivia Grant. They co-write together, and they are they run a publishing house called the Black Collar Press, and it's going to be a fun.
I was checking it out, and that is steamy as well. The titles are all sort of So I think we need to get this started because I'm feeling frisky. So I will let you introduce them.
All right, tonight on the show we have USA Today bestselling authors Jennifer Benet and Olivia Grant.
Woo! Hello.
Yay.
Hello.
Hello. We've got two for the price. It was funny. I was sat here looking at I was messaging XC, so we've only got one of them calling in, but okay, you're both sort of hovering over the same phone, I take it.
Close.
Brilliant.
We are together. We live in different states, but we are group called in.
That's clever. That's good. See, I like to think of you both huddled around, you know, the old Bakelite rotary phone. I like to think of you huddled around one of those, like in the olden days, you know. But then again, as a kid, I honestly used to think on the Top 40 show that they had all the bands in the studio.
I did.
And they had them all there, and they all played their song. But when it's actually my older sister told me, they just play the record. Absolutely destroyed it for me. Absolutely. Ruined it.
Oh, that's
ruined
so
it. Isn't it? My whole childhood just
it
down
is,
the toilet, just like that, you know. But Jennifer and Olivia, I think, co-authors, publishers, writers of STEAM extraordinaire. I'm excited. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
And I wanted to ask, what states do we have? What states are you calling from?
This is Olivia, and I am in the suburbs of Chicago, so I'm in Illinois.
And this is Jennifer Benet. I'm actually in Texas, and definitely don't want to test the limits of social distancing here. We are at the upper limit of our ICU capacity, so
hopefully you don't
in Texas.
What part of Texas are you in, Jennifer?
North Texas. We only have about 400 ICU beds left in North Texas, which is pretty terrifying.
I'm down here in Houston, and we've got plenty. But if I was really, Houston is supposed to be on its way to being a hot spot, you know, in the country, not just the state. But certainly around here, it was like suddenly, Texas was like, "Nah, we're done with this now. It's done."
I don't know if you actually, and I know this is a little off topic from our romance, but I don't know if you listened to our governor's speech today, but he actually talked about how we have to start wearing masks here in Texas because of the hotspots. And Houston was one of the ones that they were highly concerned about the number of ICU beds available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I know. I mean, Harris County, which obviously encapsulates Houston and a big county, actually. Yeah. I mean, if you go out anywhere, you know, where there's people, you have to wear your mask. I think that's not the order now. So, it's all, almost, you know, I don't know. It's still scary. You know, I think we were sort of, let's drift bar, let's go back to doing things. The cinemas are going to open soon. This is opening, that's opening. But, you know, it's still a little bit frightening.
Yeah, here in Tennessee, we've been open for a little bit now. I think we started pretty much, a little sooner than a lot of other places did. And but we were never really that locked down to begin with. I really don't think that we were. And I think when I was watching the news, was it last night? I think they said maybe, oh God, the active cases was not very high. It was pretty low, and I don't know. Part of me thinks that we just wave from afar anyway. You know, so
yeah,
there's so much space in between everybody. We just, you know, so I don't know. I mean, we're not social butterflies anyway. We just, you know, stay at home and go to the store pretty much. So, but you know,
well, I wish you guys luck in staying safe.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, we North Carolina, which, you know, we share a border there, and they just went to they upped the masks, I think, for some more weeks there that you have to wear a mask. So we'll see. I'm hoping that we don't have to go into another like shutdown thing, because although I will say that traffic was wonderful when we had the mandatory stay-at-home thing or whatever they called it. I don't even know anymore. But the traffic was amazing then. It was.
Mm-hmm.
When we started
3 whole months out of a whole tank of gas. I literally,
wow.
It was to the day, 3 months I went with one tank of gas. So it was kind of nice not having to leave, but
yeah,
Illinois.
Yeah.
We were first. Like, we had really bad hot spots here. I'm in Cook County, and so I can vouch for the effectiveness of masks. That's the only thing that really has helped us here. We're under mask everywhere we go, and it's bringing our numbers down. So it really, I've seen it working with my own eyes. So I hope that it helps you guys in Texas if people listen. So,
I wish that somebody would, and I'm sure that I don't know about every day or every other day or every week or something, but people need to learn how to wear the masks correctly, because it's not as effective if you're not wearing it. Get it correctly, and I, you know, there's so much misinformation out there, and there's so many different opinions and different quote unquote experts, and I think it's really easy for people to
in my local grocery store, and that's my one trip out a week, you know, and all our staff wear the masks, but they've got them under the chin, they've got the nose sticking out,
yes.
Either, you know, you say wear it properly or don't bother, really. You know, if you can't wear a mask.
My daughter works at McDonald's, and she'll see people pull up with the mask on and then grab it to pull it down to talk to her. I'm like, oh my God. Exactly.
Yeah. See, people driving around in their cars with their mask on by themselves. Like, why are you doing that? You know, really?
At least people are staying home and reading sexy, sexy books, or steamy, as you would say.
Yes, and horror as well. People are reading a lot of scary books as well, which is good as well. So you guys are here to talk to us about Ballantine Roulette. I love the tagline: 3 hours, 4 hard limits, 8 sexy stories. Are you brave enough to spin the wheel? Any tagline with the word hard in it is a winner for me. So Jennifer and Lydia, tell us a little bit about it.
Lydia Grant and I actually started Black Collar Press, and the first series that we released and that we're still releasing every year is Blacklight. And I will actually pass it to Lydia, because it was her brain baby, to kind of tell us about Blacklight and the series.
Okay, sure thing. So Jennifer and I have been friends and authors together for longer than Black Collar Press and Blacklight. And at the time that we met, we were both working crazy hours, type A. That's kind of, I think, what got us to be such good friends. And we knew we wanted to write a sexy BDSM series, but that neither one of us could put out books quite fast enough to keep all of our fans happy with the number of books. And so that's kind of what got me thinking about how we could collaborate together, and that's how it was kind of born. So we created this world, Blacklight. It is it's all BDSM heavy stories, but I created the story based around a trio in a prequel called Infamous Love. And so I introduced the readers to this trio that everybody just loves. And they're the owners of the club. And through the years, we've put together several series of books. Jennifer and I have written the most of the books, but then we invite our author friends and other BDSM authors to write in our world so that we can continue to have enough releases. Also, to just make sure that we have a good balance of different kinks, different heat levels, and we really pride ourselves in making sure that that every book is really feels it's canon. That's probably what I'm proudest of, is that a lot of series that have multiple authors writing in it. Which is no problem. That's just how they set out to do the series, is they'll just have things that have a loose connection, some type of topic that brings them together, but it doesn't really feel like one world. And that's really the difference, I think, with Blacklight, is our characters appear in stories over and over again, and we can bring back characters from any and all of our books, and often do. And that's why I think a lot of our readers really have connected with the series.
I really do like that idea. I am more of a character-based, when I'm reading, I fall in love with characters. So I think that, you know, a series that has all these intertwining, you know, characters and stuff, that would definitely be something that I would like to read, because, like I said, if I don't like your characters, if I don't connect with them, I'm like, what am I doing here? I want to care about them, you know. So if I see them over and over again, I know that I read it was a horror author who did novellas, and they were each connecting in a weird kind of way, and I would read one book, and then I get to the next one, and you know, the people from the previous book would be like walking down the street or something, and I'm like, oh my god, it's so and so, and I would
it's
get
them.
So excited.
That's how I always felt too. Yeah, even if it's just, you know, you run into them at a restaurant, or you see them at the club, or like, we have different characters. Some are lawyers and different professions, and we'll bring those people back in to kind of do their profession as side characters in the future. And you know, it's great at the beginning of the series, but now that we're 17, and really we're more like 18 books in because we've got the prequel, it's, you know, now anybody joining us who isn't already a Blacklight fan, it's a hard series to write in, because you have to kind of have that history in order to feel like you're writing into the world. So it is a little bit of a harder series to have new authors join sometimes, but I'm really proud of the fact that we're constantly getting submissions and people requesting to join the world more than we've been able to keep up with even. So that makes me happy. So.
And I think something that the readers really appreciate is, while there is so much depth and complexity to the series overall, none of it's required to pick up any book in the series and enjoy it. And having each of them be a standalone that is sexy and has consensual BDSM romance in it, that they know is going to be hot because we've put that brand on it, is something that we're proud of, and it continues to boost sales, which is always a great thing.
Exactly. Yes. Every book can be read as a standalone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I know that there, for a while there, the cliffhangers for you know, the books in the romance genre it was insane. I mean, it was like, seriously, you can stop right there, and then I don't get anything else for how many months? How can you do that? You know, especially, you know, in this day and age where, you know, you don't even have a cliffhanger when you're watching TV, really, because, Yeah, it's all streaming. You just go right to the next episode. Yeah, yeah. I mean, what were we watching? Oh, I think, silly, it was just Scrubs. We were watching Scrubs, and they ended a season. But, of course, we're streaming it, so you can just go on to the next show. But I'm like, can you imagine if this had been, you know, when it was out and they ended right there? I would have been so mad. But we don't have that anymore. We just instant gratification. So, but no, I like that. I like that they're not, you know, cliffhangers, and they do stand on their own. Some people don't want to get invested. You know, I don't know about invested is the right word, but you know, we're just so busy now. You know, so maybe, yeah, no, I like that. And James, we have readings tonight. We have two different excerpts, and I don't know, are they steamy, Jennifer?
I think that's a mild description.
Oh, burn.
Nice.
No, we want steamy, no. Please.
No, I think she said that was mild, so I'm thinking that might be like way, you know, sexy and more. Yeah.
I would place it squarely in the sexy category.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one of our prerequisites too. When we do sign an author to work with us, we always remind them we want all of our books to be edgy, and kind of take things to the edge a little bit, sexually and just with the storylines as well. So I do think most of our books would fall into that category.
I mean, a quick question. I mean, obviously, you know, the genre you're writing on and publishing as well. I'm speaking of publisher to publisher. I mean, do you have problems with the content as far as Amazon are concerned? Because they're getting more and more puritanical as time goes by.
They are, but we haven't. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that Amazon's primary concern is about appearances, because really what they don't want is for a cover to be too revealing, too erotic, or too sexual, because at any point in time, anyone of any age could be scrolling through Amazon looking for a book, and Amazon doesn't want to offend anyone, either through the actual cover itself or through the blurb. And I think as long as you're respectful and responsible in that way, Amazon is happy to work with you. You know, there are subgenres in the romance category for a reason. And if someone's going to click and buy your book, by the time they get that far where they're actually reading the first few pages, they know what they're getting into. We're not having accidental clicks. We're not having a scroll past where someone mm-hmm. can get some sort of detailed anatomy lesson from the cover of the book. And so I think that's where Amazon more draws the line. I think they've done a much better job than, say, Barnes & Noble in terms of criticizing and shutting down the interior of a book.
I have a question with especially with the tagline, the hard limits there, being the genre that you write in, are there any limits or anything that you won't any kink, there we go, any kink that you will not write about?
Your kink is not my kink, and that's okay. We don't judge.
Yeah,
as long as everything's consensual.
Consensual, I was going to say. The only thing is consensual, because it is they are BDSM romances. The only non-consensual components of some of our stories are either as part of the storyline. You know, it's not glorified, and in fact, you know, we take good pride in really covering some of deeper topics. So, for example, I wrote one of my longest books in the series. Really was about the Me Too movement, and it had a lot of serious components in it, and there was some definitely non-con in there, but it was the bad guy, right? It's not a dark romance that had glorified that he was going to be redeemed. We've also covered, some of our books have eating disorders in them. Some of our heroines have had body image problems that we tackled throughout the romance, and still kept it sexy, but we were able to bring, I think, a depth to some of those deeper topics. But yeah, from a kink standpoint, in fact, the excerpts that we're going to read tonight are both they're excerpts from our annual Valentine's Day roulette box set. We've done four already, and we will be doing one for next Valentine's Day. And yeah, all the full-length books are they're categorized in romance. The roulette story books or box sets are, we do put them in the erotica category because they're not really full-blown romances. And just to kind of set it up a little bit, what I love about this is that no matter how many of these box sets we do, they're always going to feel fresh because it's an event that happens at Blacklight, the club, where singles can sign up in advance, and the dominants will spin a roulette wheel to figure out which submissive they're going to play with for the night. So they are matched through the roulette wheel. They don't play with somebody they've, maybe they've known each other, maybe they haven't. And then the submissive will come up on the stage and then roll another roulette wheel to see what kink they're going to have to participate in. And by doing this, we've been able to have this unlimited mix and match of, you can have a daddy dom with a masochist and they, you know, roll, you know, flogging or anal or any kind of kink that you have. So you've got this kind of unlimited mix and match that keeps it fresh, I think. And it gives, I call it the sampler platter for BDSM people who may not know a lot about the genre but are curious. And so through that, we've been able to really write short stories with kinks that aren't really normally the, you know, part of a full-length book. And so that's one of the things that I love. And so each of our excerpts tonight are from one of those roulette books.
Well,
and
I
before
am
we get
definitely
to those, sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, before we get to those excerpts, I have to say one thing. So Livia's book that she was talking about with the Me Too movement, that book is Blacklight Scandalized. And what I loved about that book is how carefully Livia drew the line between non-consent, rape, and what happens within a consensual BDSM relationship. Because people who aren't in the lifestyle or who aren't familiar with it can have some really harsh judgments about the things that people participate in and the kinks people enjoy. And I loved how carefully and well done Livia drew that line so that it was very clear the difference. And mad props to her. I just had to do that shout out before we get to the excerpt.
Made me blush.
that's definitely a very important thing. I belong to some Facebook groups here, and basically I've learned not to post because people just I don't know. I don't think people know how to be adults anymore about anything. But I definitely, you know, one thing when I mentioned kinks, and you're like, you know, not my kink, or you know, we don't kink shame, and I'm like, you know, mm-hmm. I think that more people need to understand what that means, because you get a lot of, you know, people who pretend to, you know, not kink shame you, but then, you know, that little word "but," and then everything after that, you're mm-hmm. like, well, you just kink shame me right there. So, yeah. So,
true.
So no, I am intrigued and excited, and I'm not sure who would like to go first for the excerpts.
I think it would go well for Livia to go first, because Livia's touches more, it's closer to the spins. And just so you guys get situated, the first roulette spin, the dominant partner spins the first roulette wheel, finds out what submissive they're paired with, which is what Livia's excerpt focuses on. And then the second wheel is what the submissive drops the marble into, and that tells them their first kink. And my couple that I read about is in their first kink of the night, that they spun up on the stage, which is Valentine Roulette. These box sets come out every year around Valentine's Day. And they are beyond steamy, beyond sexy. They're straight up filthy. And I think that's a good segue to Livia.
And I mean, just asking for a friend, where can one purchase these books?
On Amazon, of course.
Of course.
On Amazon.
On Amazon, of course.
Yeah, I'm sure if Xena could just send... If Xena could just forward me the link at the end of the show, that would be great.
No problem.
Thank you.
We'll hook you up. Don't worry about it.
Oh, you're
Yay.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Yay. Okay, we are ready for an excerpt of Olivia's story from Blacklight.
All right. So my excerpt is from my heroine's point of view, and her name is Chloe Monroe, and she's an A-list actress. A little something else about Blacklight the World is that it is very exclusive. There are two clubs. The first two seasons were on the East Coast at Blacklight East in Washington, D.C. So we have a lot of politicians and, you know, ambassadors and all kinds of wonderful, juicy characters on the East Coast. And then we opened a Blacklight West in Beverly Hills as well. So the last couple of years we've had stories from both coasts. This one, both of our stories tonight are from the East Coast. And my A-list actress is going there for the exclusivity, and she's curious, but she is a total newbie to the lifestyle. And so just keep that in mind as you kind of hear her thoughts. So this is from Revealed. Her resolve went out the window the second the scariest looking guy on the stage stepped forward to roll third. As he moved into the direct spotlight, she caught a glimpse of his steely eyes staring directly at her. His hair was cut short, and the streaks of silver at his temples gave him a distinguished and authoritative aura. Chase called him Mr. Hounds as he thrust the marble into the Dom's hand, giving him the wheel a spin. Time seemed to stand still until Chase started looking through the group of women, searching for someone. Her heart lurched when his gaze stopped on her. There was a buzz in her ears, almost preventing her from hearing his announcement. Mr. Helms has rolled the princess. There had to be a mistake. She turned to the other women, glancing around in shock. Oh, come on. Surely one of you put the princess as your name, too. I mean, he couldn't have rolled me. He couldn't have. Her voice trailed off when it was clear every woman was staring at her with relief in their eyes that they hadn't drawn the guy who could win the scariest dom award of the night. I'd get up here now if you know what's good for you, Miss Monroe. His authoritative voice carried easily across the space between them, sounding as uncompromising as he looked. She spun to face him, anger flaring. Hey, can't use my real name, she protested. Chase sent him a dirty look, but didn't come to her defense. She shot him a glare that could kill a lesser man, shaking her head in disbelief as she stood grounded, refusing to move forward. The word red sat at the end of her tongue, ready to fly out of her mouth. Before she used it, she instead demanded they re-roll to choose another submissive for that dom. Chase shook his head apologetically, refusing to accommodate her wish. When Mr. Helms stalked towards the stairs, as if he were going to drag her up on the stage with force, her feet finally moved. Chloe spun and started racing towards the exit, which was easier said than done. Cocktail tables full of spectators were in the walkway, slowing her down. She heard the commotion behind her and knew instinctively that he was chasing after her. In a brief moment of clarity, she felt like Little Red Riding Hood being chased by the big bad wolf through the dense woods. She didn't even make it halfway to the door before muscular arms snatched her. One arm wrapped around her waist, yanking her to an abrupt stop. His other hand jammed into her long hair, snapping her head back so far it hurt. He squeezed her so hard that the last pockets of air left her, leaving her gasping while he ground his hips against her lower back, pressing his steely erection against her so hard she couldn't have ignored it if she tried. She'd expected him to yell at her, but instead he placed his lips against the shell of her left ear, his gravelly voice now low enough for her ears only. You're not getting away from me, Miss Monroe. I won you fair and square. You may not know me, but believe me when I tell you, you'll be glad we met in 3 hours. I may not know why you're here yet, but I'm going to make it my mission to find out and give you exactly what you need before you leave here tonight. He paused, releasing her slightly. Take a deep breath. When she didn't comply, he barked, precious air, as he continued. That's it. I feel you squirming against me. You've got an itch that needs to be scratched, don't you? Well, I'm your man. Just so you know, if you leave now, you'll be walking away from the best sex of your life. Chloe thought to think. Fear warred with curiosity. turning her into a jumbled mess. Who was this guy? So conceited, so sure of himself, so strong. And he smelled amazing, and his hard appendage grinding against her promised a one-way ride to heaven. His hand against her stomach moved higher, molding against her right breast, massaging her. He squeezed so hard, pain shot through her body, making her feel more alive than she had ever possibly felt. Be brave, he finally closed the deal with his promise. Let me take care of you tonight, baby. No one was more surprised than her when he suddenly released her. She gasped for another breath, keeping her eye on the door in the distance. She could leave. She'd never have to see anyone in this room ever again, including Chase Cartwright. She could chalk the whole night up to a failed experiment and drag herself back to New York and lick her wounds there until she had to leave for L.A. on Sunday. A tan hand came into view. He was offering the chance to choose him, to choose adventure, to pursue the nebulous desire draining her daily as she chased after something she couldn't name. She didn't remember making the decision. All she knew was her hand reached for his, locking them together just before he gently pulled her back into motion, this time back towards the stage where the roulette wheel would decide how they would spend the next 3 hours. That's it.
Oh, I want to be in that room with them for the next 3 hours.
this couple actually ended up being such a fan favorite, and I did end this novella as a kind of happy, well, no, not really. They ended the night saying goodbye to each other, but then they ended up getting their whole book. They got their whole book later called Blacklight Rescued later in that same season.
Which is amazing because Ryder is like a superhero.
Yeah, they end up happily ever after.
I have to, one of our listeners, well, my boyfriend, who wants to know if these are in audiobooks.
This particular one is not. Jennifer and I we have the first three books in the series are in audio. So the Infamous Love prequel, Blacklight Rocked, and Blacklight Exposed are, and then we hope to continue doing more of the books. But we don't have any of the roulettes in audio yet. We do have them in paperback.
I mean, you're talking about getting 700,000 words in audio.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
Right.
These are really,
it would be.
Really nice long books.
Well, I think you have a new fan, so that's why I had to ask
the
question.
I think somebody had to like hit the alcohol after that. I heard some ice cubes.
Oh, that's great.
We have to take a short break for commercials and stuff, and don't go anywhere, okay? You have to stay right there.
Okay.
Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Superman. Hey, little sister, who's the one you want? Hey, little sister, shotgun. Not day to start again. It's a nice day for a white wedding. It's a nice day to start again. Hey, little sister, what have you done? Hey, little sister, who's the only one? I've been away for so long. I let you go for so long. It's a nice day to start again. Come on, it's a nice day for a white wedding. It's a nice day to start again.
I must admit, the whole premise of the whole club thing, I do find intriguing. Obviously, I avoided the word arousing there, you know, for I didn't want to be improper or anything. But, there's the whole the exhibitionist, the voyeuristic element. But I like the idea of the roulette wheel and all that, because it takes... I say it takes some of the control away from the participant. Is that what sort of drew you to that trope?
I don't know. I think Jennifer and I are both in the lifestyle, so that was a big part of it for me, and I think for Jennifer as well. And so that was a big part of it. But I think what I love about roulette the most is that a lot of the BDSM books that I had read previous and even now, there's a lot of very kind of mainstream BDSM kinks, but there's it's hard to get people sometimes as interested in some of more like fringe kind of kinks that may not be as common. And this really is a fun way to just, with either comedy, sometimes, you know, like they roll something that really makes, you know, the reader laugh, or, you know, with the dire thing. So it's that's for me what I liked about it the most with roulette is the ability to bring in so many different kinks. There's like 30 different kinks on the wheel. And the authors do get to choose it. Yeah.
Impressive.
So we've had fire play and, you know, medical play. And what are some of the kinkier ones, Jen, off the top of your
water
head?
Sports.
Oh yeah, that like everybody put that as one of their hard limits, but
ABDL.
Yes, yeah, so I had a lot of fun writing that one. I don't know if you guys know what ABDL is. I had a lot of fun. Any guesses?
Let's quiz.
Quiz?
No Googling. No Googling.
Well,
James, you're better.
Part of the story because my character didn't know what it was either, and she rolled it, and she's like, okay, I don't know what that is, but whatever. And the Dom, of course, knew exactly that it was adult baby diaper play.
Diaper play.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
I did not know that.
Funny story. This is our next scene. I'm going to mention it anyway. Many, many years ago, back in England, we had a bit of a side on. We sort of hooked up with a freelance journalist who used to write for the equivalent to the National Enquirer. You know, the trashy magazines, and she'd come at us for, you know, I want to do a story on whatever. And she came. She said, I want to do a story on the adult baby thing. And mm-hmm. She said, I can't find anybody stupid enough, to be photographed for this article and to be interviewed. So she paid me a ridiculous amount of money, and I drove sort of like that's about 4 or 5 hours away to somewhere. There's a lady down south who's like a professional nanny. And literally, I mean, she had this room set up with an adult size crib and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Literally dressed me in a diaper and a little onesie, fed me baby. I forgot how gross that stuff is, baby food. And then she still just left me in this big crib for like an hour watching Disney movies. Best afternoon of my life, to be honest. And it was funny because,
play is your kink. That's what you're just telling us. Good job.
Well,
there you go.
That's the thing. I mean, full disclosure, it did nothing for me at all. But, you know, one of the things, I mean, obviously, you know, I've known people who were into it. And it's not a sexual thing at all. It's about the abdication
of
responsibility.
Well,
she said some of her biggest clients. The biggest. It was one of the funny things was she came after my hour. Mm-hmm. She took a peek in the back of my diaper, and I think she was disappointed because I'd not done anything. You expect me to lie there and shit myself? Dear Lord.
To be fair, because we don't know who's listening, for some people, adult baby diaper play or age play is absolutely a sexual thing. And their reasons for it are numerous, right? Because everybody's a different flavor of kinky.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so we don't want to kink shame. And it's okay
mm-hmm.
if it's not your kink. But that's why in the lifestyle we have the phrase, it's not my kink, but that's okay.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I wrote that book, because I wanted, and hopefully my story did get that across, because they had a really great time. And I loved how many reviews I got of people kind of like you, James, it said, you know, like, I never thought that would be something I'd be interested in, but boy, your story really showed me a whole new side to it. And that's really what we're trying to do, is to
mm-hmm.
just kind of, you know, open everybody's eyes that, you know, everybody's got their own different things. And, you know, and I totally do. I don't practice it personally, but I totally get it. And I think that's why I could write that story, because it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. I mean, I'm a very much live and let live kind of guy. And yes, you know, not everything is. I mean, I'm sure there are things that I've sort of done in the past that people would frown upon. But moving on, you know, certainly, you know, I as long as it's consensual, go for it. You know, if it feels good, do it. That's my motto. I mean, have you obviously, you know, you'll speak to people, read your books. I mean, have you spoken to someone who said, you know, I never considered whatever, but I read your book and gave it a go and, you know, it changed my life. Do you have sort of those moments?
Absolutely.
Those are some of the most rewarding moments for writing something that's BDSM, or we talked about it on Dark Romance last time. I think in both genres, you get people that say, I didn't know anyone else liked this. And mm-hmm. it's a freeing moment for somebody who maybe has never
had the bravery or the opportunity to talk to someone else that shares their sexual interests. And validation is something we all crave as humans. You know, we are absolutely a society-oriented species. And if we can feel accepted by literally our fellow man, it can go a long way to encouraging someone to not be so closed off or shut down, less depressed. We see the same thing with LGBTQ people when they're accepted and not shamed for what they enjoy. There's much lower rates of suicide and depression. And I think that this genre in writing and in romance gives people that outlet to feel accepted.
I think the other cool thing that I'm always, I agreed with everything Jen just said, but what, the other thing that I love is that a lot of people have their husbands or their boyfriends or their partners read with them. And I think that Roulette in particular has given couples sometimes a chance to start talking about these things that they were either too nervous to bring up or didn't know how to verbalize, but giving them the book and saying, you know, I really liked this story, and it gives them a chance to sometimes bring a deeper intimacy in. And I've heard that from multiple people of our readers. And those are some of my favorite reviews and comments that we get when that happens.
I like that. You know, yeah. I think that people who that are not at all kinky, that has any kink, they are so missing out. I really think they are. You know, it's funny because I took one of those, you know, I do not think of myself as vanilla at all. But I took one of those quizzes
Xenia
that they have.
Writes some
I think
pretty
it's...
beautiful BDSM poetry, by the way.
Oh,
thank
I haven't
you.
Read that yet. Have to read that.
I took a test. I think it was on, what is that? That it doesn't matter where it was. But, I said, no, I don't have any hard limits. I'm pretty much, I'll try anything. And I'm going through the list. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know that was a thing. Nope, I don't think I want to do that. But I was like, wow, there are so many different, people who, I'm just we're turning the lights off and, you know, you're going to both stay mostly dressed and, you know, missionary only. I'm like, oh God, you guys are missing out. And a lot of, and it doesn't even have to be like James was saying, you know, about it. You know, his experience didn't do anything sexually for him, but it was still, you know, a fun experience. And I think I find that as well, is that, you know, when you do any kind of kink, I think it brings you as a couple, I think it brings you closer together. You know, you're like, wow, mm-hmm. letting this
absolutely
person do these really kinky things to me. I would never let anyone else do these things to me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
it's intimate. It's very
yeah.
intimate.
It is.
Trust
it is
the most important component.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On that note, let's why don't we do the next excerpt that we have? I want to make sure we have enough time for the steam because James is excited. I can feel it from here. You know. He did make sure to let me know he was wearing his comfy pants that were not at all restricting. So, you know.
Oh, God.
I said I was wearing loose pants, and I'm just going to leave it there.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
See, I would joke around that I'm not wearing pants at all, but I have a skirt, so it's not really as risque as it sounds. So.
Well, that's way easier access than having to deal with any sort of waistline.
It is. I agree. Just yeah. That's, I'm not going to say that's the reason I wear them, but that's a definitely good. So, do you need to set up your excerpt at all, Jennifer?
Not really. Mine is actually from our second years of Valentine Roulette. The book is called Blacklight Roulette Redux. It's from season 2 of Blacklight. And this is part of the way through their first scene together. The characters are Bianca and Silas. Bianca has a very smart mouth on her. She's a very independent woman, and she's feisty, but I think Silas has the skill set to tame her.
Awesome.
All right.
That's all yours.
Bianca suddenly relaxed, palms opening from clenched fists, the trembling in her thighs subsiding, and he walked around to the side to ensure she was still conscious. Bleary, tear-filled eyes met his, and he made sure to keep his face stoic even as he felt a wash of relief. She was much tougher than she appeared. He'd been sure after one strike from the metal-tipped flogger that the well-dressed, smart-mouthed Bianca would be screaming yellow at the top of her lungs. But though she'd screamed, she'd never used the word. "Who do you belong to for the night?" he asked, and landed the flogger at a moderate strength. Her body jolted and then relaxed again. "You, sir," she answered on a soft whine, and his cock turned to steel in his pants. Fuck. Submission. There was absolutely nothing like it on the face of the planet, and she was taking some of his worst and still not tapping out. "Who decides how much you take?" "You, sir," she replied again, but they both know she could stop him with a word. It was why the fact that she was continuing was so fucking hot. Temptation to snag a condom from his pocket, rip open his jeans, and plunge into the sweet heat between her thighs. But he hadn't cleared that with her, and they definitely hadn't spun it. To appease his throbbing cock, he landed another hard strike on her ass. Little bruises were appearing amidst the reddened, raised welts, and he liked the look. Even better was the way she cried out quietly and then rolled her hips, so close to subspace. Finding a place on her ass that didn't have quite as many dark marks, he aimed and landed the flogger with precision. She jolted, but not as strongly as before, and he could have sworn the groan out of her mouth had faded into a moan at the end. Could she really handle him? "Do you remember what number you're at?" he asked as he dropped the tipped flogger on the floor and picked up the wooden cane. She shook her head in silence, and he smiled behind her where she couldn't see him. 8. "So I will give you 8 more with the implement I chose to finish up this scene. We're past the 30-minute mark, so I think we're done with the floggers." Bianca raised her head a little, dazed as she bordered on subspace, a true masochist, and he didn't falter for the confused question. 8 more, and if you're a good girl, you'll get your reward. And hit subspace if he could get her there. Rolling the cane in his hand, he moved to her side, checking her breathing, the languid look of her muscles, and then he brought the cane back and brought it down directly across the middle of her ass. There was half a heartbeat before she screamed, squirming against the cross as she pulled at the cuff, but he knew it was worse to wait too long. The next strike was just below that one, and she screamed beautifully, sputtering into a sob that had him groaning and fighting the urge to cup his cock through his jeans. Their audience had grown, more of the guests curling around the sides and back of the platform so they could see the beautiful array of welts he placed on her skin. Number 3 had her crying harder, and 4 landed on her sit spot and sent her into hysterics for a moment, yanking at the cuff as she fought the pain. Relax and accept it. A second later, it was almost spoken the words aloud because her arms went limp in the cuffs and her head leaned forward, panting breaths and soft sounds confirming she was still awake. The 5th strike of the cane made her body jolt, but there was barely a squeak from her, and so he placed 6 and 7 across her thighs, almost back to back. She moaned low, hips twisting in the most alluring way, sniffling softly. Only one more. Returning to the bruised welts of her ass, he aimed just above the first one he'd given her and struck, number 8. Her back bowed, breast lifted away from the wood as she cried out, and he could have sworn it was partially pleasure. A fucking masochist, the rare golden prize, the once in a blue moon sub, and he'd spun her name.
Oh, yeah. Can't you keep going?
Yeah, I forgot how much I love Silas.
Silas is pretty hot.
Yes, he is hardcore.
Yeah, I'm definitely making note of what book this is from, because this is definitely one we have to get, baby. You hear me, right?
See, another happy couple.
Yeah.
Look at that, opening conversations everywhere. I did want to say, I meant to say this before the last one. So in the BDSM community, if you're not familiar, they use a stoplight system as a generic safe word. A safe word between a couple could be anything. It could be something as weird as coffee. But in the club space, we use green, which means keep going, everything's great. Yellow, which means slow down, I need a second to breathe. And red means stop. And red in a club environment means stop everything, the whole world stops. There is no one more anything. And so when Chloe was referencing, she felt like saying red when Ryder spun her name. That's why she thought that. And when Silas is surprised that he hasn't heard yellow from Bianca, that's why he mentioned that.
Yeah.
Clever. Clever. So I think we probably had this conversation before, and somewhat predictably, I've got to bring it up again. 50 Shades. Comment,
as we said on the podcast last time, we had the conversation about how it was beneficial in the sense that it opened doors. It allowed the casual soccer mom to discuss a dirty book with her friends without feeling embarrassed because it was such a pop culture phenomenon. And so it opened the door for a lot of people to start exploring those interests and desires. 50 Shades of Grey is not BDSM. Most people in the BDSM community will say the same thing. Christian Grey is not a good dom. There's very, very little BDSM components to their relationship outside of using implements that are traditionally used in BDSM. But their dynamic in and of itself doesn't have the structure that a normal BDSM relationship has. And since Anastasia is a virgin and he does literally nothing to explain the lifestyle to her or give her an outline of, like, safe words or anything, he would be a very irresponsible dom if he was portrayed as such.
Well said.
Like Jennifer said, though, I mean, I am grateful to 50 Shades because it told me two things. I started writing myself personally right after I read that. I had been reading in the genre for a long time, but the success of 50 Shades really, it was a couple things. One was, wow, there is a market for this, right? For the first time, it was being talked about at birthday parties and things. And I also realized, I'm like, I can write a better story than this. I really, you know, and not to be conceited, but because it wasn't accurate in the lifestyle, I just felt like me to start writing. And so my very first books were all BDSM. I've written a few that aren't now, but my next series that's coming out is a BDSM series as well. So it's, It launched me into the genre, so to speak. So,
and you write it beautifully.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I love the genre.
Yeah, I have to say that after I picked up 50 Shades of Grey just because everybody was talking about it. And I really didn't have too much of an idea what it was about at all. And the only thing I had heard was that it was fan fiction from Twilight. So I was like, I like Twilight, sure. Well, you know, and I say this often, but I was about halfway through before I realized this wasn't vampires, you know, and he wasn't going to bite her. I enjoyed it. I mean, it was a very easy read, and but it did get me reading a lot of other books that were, I remember reading Captive in the Dark, I think it was called, C.J. Roberts. And I have that one. I had that on my Kindle for a good month, scared to start reading it. I was like, I don't know about this. I don't know. And I loved it. I fell in love with it. And, from there I did, Pepper Winters, Monsters in the Dark. And I don't know if I would have went to any of these books had I not read 50 Shades. So yeah, I guess it served its purpose for sure. And I have to say,
if you haven't read Jennifer's Talia series, if you like those other series, you should absolutely read her Talia series because it's awesome, just awesome.
Well, thank you.
I'm making a note of it. When you started reading, Jennifer, and you were, talking about the flogger, I was like, you know what? I need a good flogging. You know, it's almost like a full body massage, you know? I mean, it really. So anybody who has not been flogged, I say go get flogged.
Well, Well, I know, it definitely depends on how you wield the flogger. Floggers can feel very lovely, like a massage, or not. It also depends on the material.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I suppose
I'm a terrible masochist,
true.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I say that I'm not. The boyfriend will definitely tell you that I am, but I don't agree because I'll get to a point where I'm like, this hurts. This really hurts. Ow, you know, and then, you know, I'm stubborn. So I've never even said yellow. I've thought yellow a few times in my head, but it's never come out. And, you know, so I'll go from the, ow, this is not fun. This hurts right now. Ow. And then all of a sudden I'm flying and I'm like, yeah, this is what I like. Yes.
That's
so, you know,
well, you hit
now,
it.
Now, you know, when he says, you know, that I am a masochist because I don't enjoy the you know, the lead up to the flying parts. I mean, you know, it's weird. It's like I don't think I enjoy this part of it because there's the ow and I'm not going, yeah, ow, you know, occasionally, but definitely when everything is said and done, I'm like, oh God, I can't wait to do that again. So I don't know if that makes me, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the word is.
I hate to break it to you, Xtina, but you're a masochist because you have the ability to convert pain into the ability to fly. So sorry.
And it's very common to have like that love-hate relationship because, you know, you don't hit subspace every single time. And so it's like, there's always that risk there. If you're not in the right, headspace.
There have been times that I've thought, I did not hit it. I might have gotten close, but I didn't. But I still have that almost drugged feeling. But I'm still like, I don't think I really hit it because there wasn't that moment. I don't know. It's weird. But,
that's the flood of serotonin, dopamine, and all of the other delicious chemicals that your brain releases in response to pain.
It's definitely better than any drug, isn't it? I mean, you know, it is. I think anyway. You start out and it's fun and I think I'm giggling a little bit and you know then it gets a little harder and a little harder and I'm still kind of like you know smirking and then I know that one time that I'm like oh wait that hurt and then like wait a minute that really hurts right now oh my goodness what that whew yeah so it's so much fun and I can't wait to download a couple of these books tonight and start reading. So, So what are you guys working on now? Jennifer?
Jennifer, you want to go? Or?
Well, I'm...
Oh, no,
so
we got lots going on.
Yeah, we have a lot going on. I'm writing the third book in my Fragile Ties series, which is Redemption. It's way more dark romance with some twisty BDSM elements, but it definitely did not start off consensual. I think what Livia is working on is way closer to Blacklight's brand.
It is. My very first series, I've gotten the rights back. My very first series has not been for sale now for about 2 years, and so I'm doing a deep edit and adding a little bit new content. And I'm going to hopefully, starting in August, start a rapid release of 6 books in the series. So I'll do about 2 to 3 weeks apart. And it is a BDSM. It's not Blacklight. It's a different series. I'm hoping that the Blacklight fans are really going to like it because it is heavy BDSM as well.
It's glorious. She's downplaying it. It's amazing, and it's how she built her entire fan base. So no big deal, whatever.
And it is how Jennifer and I got to know each other as friends because
She
was a fangirl first. And, and then we just, you know how when you just meet somebody and the second you meet them, you're just like, okay, this is like somebody I'm going to spend the rest of my life talking to every day because I love her. And that's kind of how I feel about her.
And we've spent the last, I think, 4 or 5 years of me slowly, slowly dragging her into the pitch darkness.
I do. That's the one difference between Jen and I. I like to read dark romance, but I don't consider myself a dark romance author per se. I think I am a little bit lighter most of my stories, although I do dark themes, but my heroes are usually good guys. I wouldn't call them
actual heroes.
Dark. They're not really your traditional dark hero. But they can. Yeah, they can. So.
Yeah.
We do have for Blacklight, we've got our very first male book is going to be our next release, hopefully in July. The author is Leslie. Clark. And we've got that book in the hopper. And then perhaps Jennifer and I will be co-writing another book for the series before the end of the year. And then Maren Smith is one of our authors who's done a couple, both standalone books as well as roulette stories for us. And she's got one more book that we hope she's going to have for us by the end of the year. So we do have... probably three more full books to release this year. We've already had two this season.
And we've already started working on next year's roulette.
Yes.
Wow.
So we will have one more roulette for next February.
I'm hoping that some of the gals that write with you guys and for you guys are listening, because I'll be stalking them and asking them if they want to come on the show as well, because I find it... yeah, definitely. I love to talk to new authors, and especially I do love the BDSM stuff. I really do. And not very often have I found that I think that it is very true to the lifestyle. So, when you do find something that you're like, hey, this is it's good. It is. I
worth sticklers about it.
Question. Yeah, I think you should be, because it's also, it's responsible. You don't want a lot of people out there just, deciding, hey, we're going to do this for the night and not have any idea what they're doing. And, because some of the kinks out there, you can, I watch, what is her last name? Evie Lupine. Is that her last name? Lupine. I watch her and, some of the things that, that knife play, I read a short story about knife play once, and I was like, wow, that mm-hmm. is so hot. It's so hot, but I'm like, that can be dangerous,
It's scary,
And then I read one about breath play, and I think the breath play thing, I think that would be one of my hard limits. That to me sounds way scary. But the
Jennifer,
knife play.
Do you want to tell? Oh. Yeah, Jennifer wrote our first breath play scene for Blacklight. The first year of roulette, it was awesome.
I did water-based breath play, and it was very intense. I have breath play is one of my soft limits, just because it can trigger a panic attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that.
But she still wrote it. That was great.
I'm definitely going to be one clicking some books tonight. And on that note, I think we have to say goodnight. We are running out of time for the show, and but I've had so much fun. And when you guys have a release, you can message me and say, hey, we'd love to come on, or I will just stalk you and beg you to come back on, because I have so much fun.
Me too. It's been it's been enlightening. Great. Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Thank you.
So, thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Livia. And if anybody is listening out there, go out on Amazon and buy the Blacklight series and all the other books. There's so many. Oh my goodness, you guys are very prolific and. I'm one clicking as we speak, I think, here.
Thank you. Have fun.
Thank you both yes, so ma'am. Much for joining us. Yeah, you must come back. We need to have another BDSM night on the show, because it's fascinating. I mean, you know, all joking is absolutely fascinating stuff. So much to learn. So much to learn, you know? And so little time. Awesome. So little time, that's the sad thing. So many great kinks out there, and not enough time to get through them all. So, I'm sure, by the sound of it, I think Xtina is going to be learning a few new things later on. So, thank you for making an old woman very happy.
Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you, ladies. Have a good one. Bye bye.
Good night.
And I'm on that note. Yeah, you're right. Time has beaten us yet again. It's time to say good night, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
One can tell. Oh yeah, I'm the great pretender.
Like a cloud.